This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show.
It's a good song, Earl. You ought to make this your theme.
You know what? I've been playing this song for 52 years.
52 years?
This song came out in 1970.
Right.
And you think about, if you listen to the lyrics, it's relevant.
No, it's about political processes that are not working.
Yeah, he was so far ahead of the curve with this, and it sounds, and every time I listen to it, I hear something different. War is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know, we've got to find a way to bring some understanding. I mean, all of those things are relevant to today. Well, let's get started. Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. Hey, good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good, Earl. It was a dreary morning, but better than the fog yesterday.
Let me ask you, man, young single guy, are you going to burn the town down on New Year's?
I don't have plans as of yet. Probably not.
Sandy, a 25-year-old guy. Let me ask you.
New Year's, New Year's was only a time.
Amateur hour?
It was amateur hour. stay off the streets. It's kind of like St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah. All right. So by now, if you don't know who that is, it's my co-host Sandy Williams. And, you know, Sandy doesn't like to talk about himself and who he is and all those things. But for new listeners who wonder, who is this guy? He's always got something to add. He's always got something to say about things. Sandy, a little bit about who Sandy Williams is. A little bit, just a wee bit. So people can say, well, that guy's doing a lot of talking, but who is he?
Yeah, well, you know, he's, yeah.
and why does he feel so, you know, privileged to tell us all about what's going on in this country?
Been around for many decades, okay? That's probably the prime reason.
A lot of us have been around many decades.
Yeah, yeah. Well, of course, yeah. So, spent a long time practicing law, was in politics for a while, trained, you know, went to school as an economist, went to business school, law school, and came away knowing that I didn't know a lot.
You've got some street cred.
Possibly. that should be the thing that everyone judges rather than
Got some street cred, and that's what people need to know. Sandy Williams has some street cred to talk about these issues that we talk about. But anyway, I don't know how much your street cred goes into the drone conversation, Sandy. just a week ago, it's all people talk the drone. The drones.
Orson Welles and the War of the Worlds. Yeah. Orson Welles, this guy from Kenosha, Wisconsin, had this radio
show.
My favorite
movie,
yeah,
War of the Worlds.
Yeah, and then it was a radio show to start with, the War of the Worlds, and he announces the invasion of Martians. And the world believed it. Everyone listening to the radios had a couple of minutes there where they thought we were invaded by Martians. So that kind of happened again in New Jersey. And I think it's because our social media and our actual media have turned into tabloid. You know, it's whatever is exciting, whatever is frightening, whatever sells, it goes, right? So we have this phenomena ongoing in New Jersey and immediately turns into Martians or Chinese or
Russia,
whatever, you know, and we leap to the furthest conclusion. Hysteria reigns. Our president-elect wants to talk about it. And
the
and
governor.
Governors.
The mayor.
Yeah, everyone's talking about it and worried about it.
All the news outlets.
Turns out that worry only lasted about 3 days. Yeah, 4 days.
Maybe. Yeah, but the people were in panic. Okay, they've got to tell us something is up there, and they won't let us know what it is. And it's all that they talked about.
Well, I mean, you know, to me, that's symptomatic. That's how we've been living for the last three decades or two decades, is everyone gets inflamed. You know, we are, our hair, like, let's put it this way. I'm surprised any of us have any hair, because we all behave like our, like our hair is on fire, okay? And it just seems to have become the a way of life, that whatever happens is a big deal. The storm that's going to be next week, the worst storm ever, batten down the hatches. And it's kind of like wolf. I'm afraid that this hysteria over everything is ultimately going to numb us to the point where, when it really happens, we're all going to say, yeah.
So whatever happened.
Whatever.
Well, so it's Chicken Little.
Yes.
So whatever happened to independent thought, Sandy? It used to be that people would have independent thought. It's almost like the people don't have independent thought anymore. Well, it's groupthink.
Well, the thing is, we talked about this on the way down here, but it used to be, before radio and TV, all we had was community. We had the place we lived in and newspapers, and we would read a newspaper, and otherwise we could talk to our neighbors. But our capacity to get worried about something that was happening in New Jersey, if we lived in Wisconsin, was about nil. We wouldn't care about it. And so what's happening now is people are getting all fired up about things in which they are not having firsthand experience. It's all secondhand experience. If it was happening right down the block, you could all go reach your own judgment about what it is. Oh, those lights, yeah, that's the Northern Lights. Don't worry about it. but if it's happening in New Jersey and we simply get told about it by hysterical sources, we can all get hysterical too.
You know, Sandy, and this thing just went on and on and on, and then all of a sudden it died out inside of a week. It disappeared.
Yeah.
Everybody was talking about it, even it's social media talking about it. They were talking about it on the afternoon and evening news. They spent all this time, they sent all the reporters, everybody was, you know, the invasion's coming. It's coming. And the government knows it, and Joe Biden knows it, and he's not doing anything about it, and we need to know. And these people got everybody alarmed. I never got alarmed about
it. See how exciting it can be, though? You mean, just you can hear it in your voice, or you're chewing on the bait.
Well, I just don't understand how we've gotten to where we don't think for ourselves anymore.
Well, I think sheeple is a real problem.
Yeah, sheeple. Yeah.
I think we have become, in many respects, sheeple, and that's how herds react. You know, herds will react in kind of a wild way when they get confronted with a problem. You can see them. They turn and run, and they all run together hysterically. And so I think we have become a people who are not thinking for ourselves, and we're being told how we should believe in order to be a conservative, how we should believe in order to be a liberal. You know, the political correct movement was kind of a sheeple thing. There's just a lot of sheeple going around.
you know, Sandy, as a guy who's lived a few years, I do remember America and Americans at a time before this. And I think we were just, it was a little bit better when people had to make up their own minds about things. And they would weigh these things themselves and say, this is what I believe.
Well, there was a world of Walter Cronkite and Newman and the other newsmen and news media, which prided themselves on being relatively, or at least apparently, unbiased. I think they all carried a bias of some sort. But people went to the news. They found it credible. They seemed to be factual. And I think it was, in fact, a great deal more factual then than it is now in terms of the way things were presented and what things were chosen to be presented. And we lived in a world of trust. I mean, the 50s were definitely a time of public trust. The 60s were until Vietnam and the apparent dismay we all experienced when we realized that things weren't as they seemed about Vietnam. And we became susceptible to theories, you know, with the assassinations, and they were sort of beyond rationale, and we all began to exercise
imagination. We knew something wasn't right.
Yeah. And so, you know, we've evolved into this over time. The group psyche of the people who've lived through all of that set us up to be, I think, less inclined to relate directly to what we're told.
So if you just joining us, it is Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Sandy, the genie's out of the bottle, so to speak, and we're not going back to those times when people did those kinds of things. And I think what it does is it puts us in a situation, Sandy, of jeopardy and peril when we can't ourselves make decisions predicated on what, I mean, we used to have to read things, right? Whatever it is you want to know in this world, it's in a book. Don't ask me how it got there, but anything you need to know in this world, you're a well-read man, it's in a book. We don't read books much anymore.
Yeah, we argue about the facts. You know, we argue about sourcing the facts, but most of the sourcing that we argue about isn't a book. You know, it isn't a written book. It's some social media source. It's some news media source. It's some governmental source. So we've had trouble now finding sources that we can trust and that we can mutually trust so that we can get on the same page on facts so that we can then get on the same page about solutions to the issues that we have to address. Our world is much different today, Earl, than it was when you and I were younger in terms of where the country is and where we can imagine that the country's going in this next new year and the new years thereafter. Because now I can imagine perilous outcomes for our country that I couldn't imagine 20 years ago or 30 years ago.
So you having said that, that's where we're headed. We're going to talk about a litany of things as we approach 2025. Where our nation is headed, how, if possible, if we can change the trajectory of what could, Sandy, become perilous times, and whether or not the American people are awoke to what's transpiring and whether or not we can transform it and change it and correct it before we go down a path that I think once you and I have this conversation with the audience, can be considered perilous. It's where we're going. 855-752-4842. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host Sandy Williams and you on the Earl Ingram Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Sandy Williams. All right. Welcome back.
It's going to be a funky
to the Earl Ingram Show, as always. You can join us at 855-752-4842. Believe it or not, Sandy Williams, a funky new year.
The Eagles.
All right. What was that? Oh, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. You can text us at that same number. I don't know if the new year is going to be funky, but it is going to be harrowing.
Well, it all depends on what you mean by funky, right?
Yeah.
I think it's going to be funky.
All right. Let's do this. So, Sandy, we wanted to talk about systematically. We're going to talk about a whole array of things that all tie in together throughout this entire show. And I think it's great that we can begin this conversation because the new year's right around the corner, new president, and all of those things, Sandy. But systematically, you wanted to begin by talking about a tax cut that Donald Trump is and Republicans are proposing. What happens with that?
Well, I think the main point is that they're going to do this tax cut early, right? They're going to do right first thing.
It's going to happen.
First agenda for Congress, okay? I mean, I'm more worried about the stuff the president's going to do that doesn't involve Congress, but the first congressional stuff he's going to do, tax reduction. Why do they do the tax reduction first? Well, first of all, we're operating with big deficits, and it's fiscally irresponsible to have another tax reduction that's going to simply increase the deficit that we're experiencing. So to support a tax reduction, the only responsible thing would be to figure out programmatic cuts to offset the loss of revenue that will be caused by the tax reduction. But you can't do that, right? If you want to pass the tax reduction, you can't tell the people how they're going to pay for it up front, because then you'll never get to the tax reduction. If you start talking about all the programmatic cuts that you need to make in order to get to the tax reduction, the people are going to rise up and say, you can't, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that, don't cut the taxes if that's what's required. So what's happened in every administration that wants to cut taxes is they do it first. And then they start talking about how they're short on revenue. Now they're even shorter on revenue because they just cut the taxes. So now we've got to go out and make some big cuts in programs. And so that's what Mr. Ramaswamy and Elon Musk are all about. They're going to cut these taxes first, and then these people are going to come in with hatchets and axes to cut expenditures to try and measure to match the tax reduction, or even more than match the tax reduction. It's irresponsible. It's the path to casino bankruptcy that Donald Trump used for his businesses is to incur more debt, which is what it is when you cut taxes. And up front, okay, you shouldn't do it that way. And I'm troubled that that's what's going to happen. And politically, what's going to happen is probably be the same as 2017. Throw a bone to the middle class, you know, give them a $300 or $400 tax reduction. Tell them it's a big deal. And meanwhile, all those people who own assets, all the wealthy people who are at the top 1% are going to get huge tax reductions. Okay, it'll have a huge impact on their capacity to amass even more wealth, which is not something that is critical to them, and it's not something that will improve the economy at all.
So Sandy, you know, when you talk about tax breaks for the wealthiest amongst us, and all I've been hearing about, and we've been hearing about, is this, what is it, $40 billion? Trillion dollars that we owe, 35, 38, whatever it is, debt, and the impact that that has on our economy long term. How do you dig yourself out of that calamity already if you're going to pour even more gas on that fire?
Well, it's totally fiscally irresponsible. It's irresponsible. The tax reduction in 2017 was fiscally irresponsible. We had a roaring economy, okay? And we poured gasoline on the fire, and all it did is perk the economy up even just a bit more. But it wasn't a responsible thing to do. And there's all this talk about waste in government, but we're going to find out that there isn't billions and billions, hundreds of billions of dollars of waste in the federal government. The only way they can cut the federal government massively is to massively cut programs, okay?
Or the military.
And the military, which is a program. But, you know, the notion of waste really means that things are being done inefficiently. And What we need is we need the government to deliver the programs that are meant to be delivered based on congressional action efficiently. And so I'm all for efficiency improvements in the federal government, but there's nowhere near the kind of money that can be derived from more efficient operations.
That offsets the major tax cut that they're getting ready to
absolutely
give.
Absolutely not. You know, they don't square it at all. And so we're being hoodwinked, okay? And we're being hoodwinked by those who will most benefit from tax reductions. And
but, Senator, we've been down that road before.
Well, I know, this whole trickle-down thing. I mean, the problem with the American people is that we admire wealthy people. We don't envy them. We don't ostracize them, as many societies do. The European society is much more likely to be suspicious of those with wealth. The American public embrace them. Elon Musk is a hero, okay? And I don't begrudge people their wealth. I just think that we need to understand that wealth is amassed because these people live in a country that affords them that opportunity. And they ought to be willing and interested in paying taxes. And they ought to want to live in a country where Tom, Dick, and Mary can thrive as well.
So I don't think it's so much wealth as it is obscene wealth. A guy with $400 billion and climbing. Come on.
Yeah, he needs an tax reduction.
Yeah. 855-752-4842. It's Friday. That means Friday is my co-host Sandy Williams and you. We're going to continue a discussion that you should hear and certainly involve yourself with. But I can't get this out of my mind. Sandy Williams is playing Bootsy Collins in 2025. All right.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. heroicdeed.com.
At the stroke of midnight, on that great holiday, gonna have a ball, and that ain't all. Gonna chase the blues away. I'll be bringing it.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. It means Friday is my co-host, Sandy Williams. So Sandy, we talked about the tax reduction that Donald Trump is talking about, the impact of what that is going to have on a nation that's already struggling economically and a poor and middle class citizens who are looking and hoping that things are going to change for them, and just had an election and a guy who's now going to be the president of the United States is the guy pushing another big tax break after he had promised them he was going to do something to make things better for them. He talked about their pain. He felt their pain. Right.
He said he felt their pain. I'm not willing to go all the way to the fact that he felt their pain because I don't think he ever has felt that pain. And I think what's troubling now is that we're heading off into an environment over the next 4 years where we're going to be stressing some of the very most fundamental parts of the American political structure, the structure that is our government. And that stress could well create major fissures, major kind of a seismic event with respect to our government's capacity to govern us. And one of the problems that Tom, Dick, and Mary has is the frustration they've experienced. It's an economic frustration, it's a financial frustration, and it's been a political frustration. Nothing gets accomplished ever since Karl Rove and the gridlock of Washington froze the processes of government. And since the middle class has faced increasing problems with the cost of their health care, the cost of their child daycare, the cost of housing, the cost of education. And since they've become double breadwinners, all of these things have stressed the middle class to the point where things don't seem to be working for them. And so that frustration undoubtedly led to the capacity of someone who is a charismatic leader, Donald Trump, to grab a hold of the populace, those who are frustrated, to grab a hold of their frustration and to say, you're mad, I'm mad, let's join forces. Let's get something done. Now, he's not told them what he's going to get done for them, but clearly the steps that he's now talking about have nothing to do with improving the lot of Tom, Dick, and Mary, including a tax reduction that redounds materially to the benefit of large corporations and wealthy individuals, people who have money so they can pay taxes.
So, Sandy, Tony says we've been told rich people got that way through hard work, and we value hard work, but hard work is not how the obscenely wealthy got their money.
Well, my point, and I've said this in the car, the system we have rewards people who own assets. And by assets, I mean real estate, a house, that's the main source of wealth for most people, but also intangible assets, stocks, bonds, real estate.
Pro football teams.
Yes. I mean, the things that you can own that can escalate in value far faster than you can earn money, whether you earn money at the rate of $40 an hour or $1,000 an hour, whatever the rate at which you earn money by the hour, you can't get amazingly wealthy through the sweat of on your back, okay? You can only get amazingly wealthy based on the ability of the assets you own to multiply in value rapidly. And that's how the very wealthy get wealthy. But Tom, Dick, and Mary have a terrible problem being able to own assets. It's very difficult for them, particularly if you live paycheck to paycheck. If you live paycheck to paycheck, you don't develop and accumulate assets at all.
But amazingly wealthy is not what people are trying to get. They're just trying to own a house, a couple dollars in the bank. I mean, the American dream.
What's interesting to me is that it's the amazingly wealthy, it's the top 1% who are pushing hardest for tax reductions. They've already made it, and it's almost like they want to pull the ladder up behind them because why would they want to reduce taxes so they can accumulate even more wealth when the amazingly wealthy are the busily accumulating wealth not for themselves? They can't possibly spend it. They are accumulating it for not even just their children or grandchildren, but the amazingly wealthy, the billionaires, are accumulating money, I guess, for their great-great-grandchildren. And, you know, if they continue to behave this way, if they continue to create a system that doesn't work for Tom, Dick, and Mary, if they continue to create a system that can't be fixed from within by political and governmental action, then it will break, okay? And their great-grandchildren won't get that money after the revolution.
So you use the verbiage revolution. America's trust in the nation's systems have hit record lows. And you and I and others see it. We've seen the fact that would have never believed that we would have lived long enough to see this nation being challenged, its systems being challenged from within.
Yeah.
Because it's always been the outside world is coming after us because they're jealous of us. But I remember reading something decades ago about America will be destroyed from within.
Well, my point about my worry about the next administration is not what Congress will do, okay? It's what the president will do in the exercise of his presidential powers and testing the imperial powers of the presidency. How far can the president push his ability to do things unilaterally? And when you're doing that, you're pressing against the Constitution, right? The Constitution is the thing that constrains the power of the president. So when you operate at or beyond the edge of the envelope of the power of the president, the only entity out there that is in a position to constrain your power is the Supreme Court. And so it will have to be the Supreme Court that will exercise a constraint on the power of the president for keeping him from taking a hold of massive imperial powers. I mean, if the president were to decide to declare martial law for whatever reason, for instance, for the purpose of deporting foreign nationals, who could constrain that exercise of martial law? Well, only the Supreme Court. We watched South Korea go through a political crisis for that very kind of reason. Is President Trump, could he do such a thing? I don't know, but I can imagine it. But there are other things as well. I mean, many forms of the exercise of his presidential power will press up against the Constitution. Can he fire 15 or 20,000 federal workers in order to replace them with politically loyal people? We'll find out, but the court is the one that will decide whether he can or not.
But Americans have lost faith in the court system. It's at an all-time record low at a time of heightened political division. America's confidence in their country's judicial system has dropped to a record low.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was the New York Times.
Yeah.
But I think that clearly it has, because it's been under assault from the left and from the right. You know, the left is of a view that the courts have given Teflon Don a pass on everything. That's what they call him. And on the right believes that the prosecutorial system and the courts have been politicized to use against Donald Trump. And Donald Trump himself has directly assaulted the courts every time they've tried to constrain his power. He's attacked them directly. So from the standpoint of the confidence of the public in the court, it's definitely been eroded very materially. It was also eroded by the likes of the civil rights issues and the trials of the police around the country with respect to their conduct of their police powers within the communities. And so, yes, we have an erosion of the confidence in the courts, but it is only the court that can constrain the power of the president. And so we're going to have potentially constitutional crises associated with that. And if this court doesn't stand up to this president, then we can figure that there might be an exercise, an effort to get a third term. There might be a declaration of martial law. There's all kinds of things that the president could do, which would create the kind of constitutional crisis that is kind of frightening and hard to imagine.
But I don't feel comfortable with the makeup of the United States Supreme Court as it is today, since Donald Trump single-handedly appointed four of them.
Well, there you go. See, you're one of these people who's lost confidence.
Well,
okay?
Yes, well, because visually, we've seen, right? They have supported Donald Trump, Sandy, in ways I don't think they would have supported other people, and the fact that he's done things illegally.
Yeah, Trump appointed three of these.
Three of them.
Yeah, Thomas was appointed before. But the fact is that we have had something kind of like this during the New Deal, okay? The court, when FDR took office, was a conservative court. And he appointed Felix Frankfurter and a number of liberals to the court. And that court ended up sustaining the redefinition of interstate commerce to the point that allowed the federal government to exercise a great deal of administrative regulatory controls that were enacted during the New Deal. And so that was a time that we had kind of a whole bunch of constitutional tests, and we withstood that. I'm just much more worried about a president who's interested in exercising power beyond the Constitution and wanting to stretch the version of the presidential powers. The contests that were involved with FDR and the New Deal were the powers of Congress with respect to regulation, not the power of the president, okay? Now what we have is someone who wants to exercise the power of the president to the nth degree. That's what Project 2025 wants to accomplish. That's clearly what Donald Trump wants to accomplish. And I'm just concerned that what we could end up with in 4 years is a constitutional crisis based on a failure of the judiciary. And the epiphany I've had, even as a lawyer, is in the last 10 years I've come to realize how fundamentally important to the American political system our courts are and confidence in the courts are. Because the only power that the courts have is dependent on the public's confidence in the judicial system. The courts, other than locally where they have sheriff and police to arrest Tom, Dick, and Mary, nationally, the courts have no power for enforcement other than through the executive.
Let's go to Dave from Milwaukee. Good morning to you, Dave. Thank you for the call. You say what?
Good morning. Sandy, I have had a question and confusion about the state of Wisconsin surplus. I understand it's, I hear them talking that it's about $4 billion, the surplus, and the controversy on what to do with it. I occasionally I visit the U.S. debt clock. It shows the the United States government debt at about $36 trillion. But it also, it's really nice. You can go and look at the states.
Right, right. Seen it. Go ahead.
So I look. I'm on the state of Wisconsin debt clock, and they have a state and local section, and it says that the state of Wisconsin debt is running at $53.25 billion of debt. So,
well, let me say that the state of Wisconsin cannot constitutionally run a deficit. So the extent to which it has debt which it has floated in the municipal bond in the bond market to finance.
That's covered. Yeah.
Yeah, which are authorized by the state legislature, and so they have bonds that are issued, and municipalities do the same thing. They can issue municipal bonds. So there's no such thing as a debt that involves that is the basis or caused by a deficit because. Localities in the state can't print money. They can't come up with anything other than, and they can't borrow for operating costs. They have to borrow for capital costs.
So, Dave, quickly, what was your question?
Why don't we use that surplus to pay down the debt so we can save on the interest?
All right, Dave, thank you very much for the call. 855-752-4842. You know, we're going to move on in our discussion with Sandy, especially when we talk about what impact this has on your and my everyday life and your confidence in our nation. It's Friday. That means Friday is my co-host Sandy Williams and you on the Earl Ingram Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday is my co-host, Sandy Williams, and Sandy the music.
New Year's, different kinds of New Year's conversations lyrically.
Before we go back to the phone line, Sandy, I want to read a couple of paragraphs. The United States saw a sharp drop of 24 percentage points over the last 4 years, setting the country apart from other wealthy nations where most people on average still express trust in their systems. The results come after a tumultuous period that included the overturning of the nationwide right to abortion, the indictment of former President Donald Trump, and the subsequent withdrawal of federal charges and his attacks on the integrity of the judicial system. The drop wasn't limited to one end of the political spectrum. Confidence dropped among people who disapproved of the country's leadership during Joe Biden's presidency and among those who approved, according to Gallup. The respondents weren't asked about their party affiliations. Sandy, so I can't, it's hard for me to trust a society and a government that if I do something that's not right, the judicial system is going to punish me as an American citizen. And I've got to hire an attorney and I've got to try to fight something that in most instances I'm going to wind up losing. But there's a double standard for somebody like Donald Trump with a lot of money.
Well, it's a lot of money. It's a lot of. It's different, though.
And politics. Power.
He's got a political position.
But that shouldn't matter when we're talking about.
Well, like I said, though, and I said this early on, prior to the at the time of the initiation of the litigation against him, that the judiciary is in a tough spot. They're between a rock and a hard spot. When a president acts outside the norms, when a president starts trying to press beyond the edge of the envelope, whether it be a matter of civil law or a matter of constitutional law, when you try to have a court enforce an action against a president, you end up with a conflict in power that involves political power and judicial power. And ultimately, the judicial power is dependent on the faith and trust of the American people. And the more they put that into play on a political basis, then the less trust there is. And when they lose that trust, we're losing the most fundamental constraint on the power of the president. And that is the way the balance of power of our government is set up. There needs to be someone who judges who has what power. What power does the Congress have? What power does the president have? Well, that's to be decided by the Supreme Court. And if we lose power, if we lose confidence in the Supreme Court, the whole thing crumbles.
Sandy, justice.
And when it crumbles, it means that it can't be fixed from within. And so here's my fear, that we've got an economic system that isn't working well right now for Tom, Dick, and Mary. And as a result, they're blaming not only the economic system, but the political system and their version or their concept of who the establishment is. And we have rampant right now a great deal of anti-establishment mood. Some people think the establishment is the government, the deep state. Some people think the establishment is corporate America and business, and that kind of defines the difference between the left and the right. But we have a lot of people who are working now thinking anti-establishment thoughts, and they want things to change. Well, if you can't change the system from within, then there's only one way to change it, which is from without, some form of revolution. That revolution can be is likely to be populist. It can be one that leads to autocracy. It can be one that leads to some revision in government. But nothing good will come of it, because the version of government we have right now is probably the optimal version we can come up with. If it's broken, it needs to be fixed from within.
Sandy, justice is supposed to be blind. What Donald Trump was being accused of was before he became the president. So when you say that he can commit crimes,
well,
and then before becoming the president, that he shouldn't be held accountable for, the rest of us, if we commit a crime, we're held accountable for that.
Well, the problem with the crimes he was charged with were technical paper type violations. It was as if he was charged with tax evasion. He made the description. He made the comparison of himself to Al Capone. And, you know, Al Capone
went to jail for it.
For tax evasion.
Right.
He never went to jail for killing all the people he killed. So
right.
Donald Trump was telling people, look, I'm being charged with something so they can get me, but it's just technical. And the fact is that it was kind of technical. It wasn't a crime that was prosecuted very often. And so it caused an erosion in the – look, I'm not arguing that he didn't commit them. He did. He was – a jury decided he did, so I have to say he did. And I think he did. But – the fact is that it eroded the confidence in the courts in a manner that is troublesome for the system, okay? It's troublesome for the system. And so that's why it's important that when we elect presidents, they be people who are likely to operate within the norms, within the norms of civil law and within the norms of constitutional law and criminal law. And we ended up electing this guy who is charismatic, based on his personality, who actually operates way outside
so, Sandy,
the norms.
So, Sandy, I'm not so delusional that I'm going to sit here and try to debate law with you. What I'm saying is the belief that we've had in this system is that it treated everybody the same. It's the one thing about our judicial system that was supposed to make us better.
You're just giving voice to the fact that people now have less trust in the judicial system.
All right, 855-752-4842. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host Sandy Williams. We're going to drill even deeper on the other side. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. Tell me time alone. I feel fine.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.